Okay, thank you everybody. We're back in session. If we can come back to the topic of revocation, I think we'll spend another 30 minutes or so, if necessary, on this topic. So Bernie, we were up to 5.2.3.3.3, and that sounds like a lucky number to me. So Bernie, please continue.
Thank you, sir. Uh, 52.33.3, email connectivity to the management staff, the manager, the IANA contractors, the only correction here, must be able to contact the manager via email. I don't think there's any argument there. There hasn't been in the past, at any rate. More interesting is 52.3.34. There must be administrative contact and a technical contact for each domain. For top-level domains under country codes, at least the AC must reside in the country involved. So, new text. Let me pull up my notes. All right. So, there was a lot of discussion on that point last time, and we've come up with, over here, the manager must confirm that, and the IANA contractor must be able to validate that the administrative contact resides in the country or territory associated with the CCTLD. This establishes a clear intention from RFC 1591 that there be local, in-country, or territory associated with the CCTLD presence.
Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Frank Murch, for those who are online. AQ. Is there anybody resident in Antarctica?
No. I mean, yes, there are people resident, but not all year round.
Well, the residence, I would have thought, would imply a permanent residence. There's also territories, of course, like Pitcairn, where I don't know that there's an administrative contact actually on the island. I think this is a little... I mean, obviously, the intention is that in 99.99% of cases, but there are rare exceptions that perhaps need to be thought about a little bit.
Sure. Kim?
So in interpreting it to date, we've taken the term country to heart, and if it's a territory dependent on another country, then it's been satisfactory that they're simply in the country. So, you know, for an Australian dependency, that could be mainland Australia, for example.
Okay. So perhaps there's a dual kind of role here. If it's a country, it's this, and the territory is that. Eberhard?
I think we can solve this because Antarctica is the only one territory that is organized by treaty, and the administrative manager lives in one of the treaty states, if I'm not mistaken. It's the University of Auckland, if I'm not mistaken. So I think we should just not go there.
Vicky.
So now I am going to channel John Postel, so I'll do it directly. The issue here, and I think it's important because otherwise we are going to get ourselves wrapped around a pole on a whole lot of other things, is a jurisdiction issue. And so I don't know if we don't have to go there, but I think unless we stick with there has to be someone subject to the jurisdiction of the country, we will get ourselves into a mess. Very quickly, because then IANA will be asked to, you know, sort of carry out the laws of the country, which is what we don't want.
Can we perhaps consider whether or not we should rephrase this more as a best practice, like normally the manager will, etc. I don't know. Okay, not liking it. Okay, I have Martin, then Daniel. Martin.
I would find that very, very difficult to accept. I like the jurisdiction approach, because if you live in jurisdiction which you know, the requirement that you live in the country, you are under the local law. If you are not in country, then I think there is, for me, some sort of implication that, and some sort of expectation that there is a way that the local internet community can do something with you, about you. And so it does seem to me that we have to find some way of embodying the concept of why would you need an administrative contact locally? You know, this isn't actually the manager, this isn't a liaison officer, this isn't a marketing man or anything like that. It is the administrative contact and the person who could be brought up in front of a court of law for failing to meet some of the obligations that are on you as a CC manager. And I think we need to capture that somehow, however unpalatable that might be.
Okay, I've got a speaking order of David, then Stephen, then Bill. Sorry,
Daniel.
Can't read my own writing.
Okay, what I wanted to say actually was said most of it already. But the issue with the it's of course nicer to say the administrative contact should be subject to the jurisdiction, but this is very variable from country to country, and in some cases you may be subject to the country's laws, even if you don't reside in that country. In other cases, you may be in theory subject to those laws, but if you happen to reside at the moment in some other country, this cannot be enforced in any way. So this is very complicated, and indeed we need to take in account the current IANA practice because I think they have had to deal with situations like that. But we also have to take in account that for some territories it is impossible for somebody to reside there. So it's indeed very difficult.
Okay. Extraordinarily. Stephen, I think, was next, then Bill, then Patricio, then Frank, then Becky, were you indicating? So, Stephen.
Is it sufficient that the jurisdiction is at the country level, as I understood what Kim said a few moments back? The interpretation is that country trumps territory.
I think again that's probably going to jurisdiction, not the country trumps territory, but the jurisdiction that's responsible for. And I think the example was Australia with its dependencies like Christmas Island and so on, that mainland Australia is the governing country for those territories. But notwithstanding,
well, I'm thinking both of AS's situation and PR situation, NVI situation, but I'm also thinking of the French territories because those are all run out of AFNIC.
Yes, very good points, Stephen, and I think this is an issue where we may be currently concentrating on a one-size-fits-all solution, and we need to be more flexible in that. But I'll go back to our speaking order. I've got Bill, then Patricio, then Frank, then Daniel, then Martin. So, Bill.
Hi, it's Bill Simic. I think we're making an error that we may have made a few times in the past and have worked our way around. But there is a distinct difference between the manager and the administrative contact. And it's my opinion and my belief that jurisdiction over the manager is not jurisdiction, over the administrative contact. The jurisdiction over the administrative contract is not jurisdiction over the manager. It's been my understanding, my belief, that the local requirement was more aimed at local availability, local communications, local input, and not jurisdictional. And it's surprising to me to see us start using this word in a way in which a local law could apply to an employee of a manager who's located elsewhere.
Yeah, and well put, Bill. And I think also in our discussions about the admin and technical contacts, we've downplayed the relevance of those roles as being, you know, the sponsoring organisation, the admin and the technical contacts as all being 33 1/3% each of the delegation. So, we need to reflect on that a little.
Just a little comment on my own channeling of John, and that is that having served as a manager or designated manager for the US.US third level domains that he set up, his expectation that was that you would be in communication with the government, but you didn't have to be in that town or community in order to manage that local TLD.
Yeah. So this one is going to get more complex, I think, as we go on. So Patricia.
Patricia Bobletti. I have two different comments. One is a question for Kim. I recall that in the IANA report there was mention of the number of CCTLDs that now have role accounts and job titles as contacts rather than individuals. And how would then that be interpreted? A role account cannot be, cannot reside, perhaps won't be easy to see where it resides. And my second point is that I would assume that all this text will also go someplace else, right? Because it doesn't really belong in the revocation discussion.
Okay, noted. Kim, did you want to respond?
Sure. I think you've identified an issue. I mean, you know, broadly, whenever we have a role account, we try to know who is behind that role account wherever possible. That said, I just double-checked it's still the case. There's a specific European CCTLD, which I won't name, that has a role account listed as the admin contact, and I know that person that is that role at that registry lives in another country. So it's not entirely academic. It actually happens. But where you simply list the job title rather than the name of the person. I would just say that the meta observation is that usually these aspects we don't evaluate until there is a delegation or a redelegation and there's some kind of contest or review. If it's simply the status quo and it's running as usual, we wouldn't seek to intervene in such a situation.
Well, that brings up the interesting point of whether IANA should be periodically checking and so on. So that's
I'll leave that for you to comment on.
I'm not going to take that argument anyway. Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. In raising this, I hadn't occurred to me just the depth and complexity that there is in this. I just knew of a few cases which didn't fit this. It's obviously something which it does require quite a lot of further thinking about. And I think the point is fairly made that maybe it doesn't belong in the revocation thing. It's a deeper issue than that. So it probably needs to be shelved and thought about some more. Yep. I think there's somewhere between jurisdictional issues and something else that requires here, because you can think of all sorts of individual cases. For example, Pitcairn Islands theoretically is British, but when there was prosecution for rape on Pitcairn, it took place in New Zealand and in New Zealand court. Similarly with Antarctica, it's not clear with a treaty territory such as that just where jurisdiction actually would lie. It certainly, we wouldn't want to say it lay in, for example, in the UN. So there are lots of different examples. They are quite minor, but I don't think they can just be left on the table waiting for something to arise. I think we do need to have a defined position at some point. but clearly not now. Yep.
Thanks, Frank. Bernie, did you want to specifically answer that?
Well, no, I just want to make the point that this is one of the criteria that's expected of the manager and therefore could enter into consideration to see if someone is significantly misbehaving. So we are going to have to get through this.
Yep. Okay. Daniel?
Okay, I think this is getting too complex in this context. I think we should probably spend some more time to research the issue in the sense of making some list of exceptions that exist to see how those fit in the model, because the model assumes that in a way every CC is a country, which we know is not the case. And it also assumes that every CC has a jurisdiction, which is again a bit complicated. Like, for example, the EU, which is the jurisdiction there, and where must the EU manager actually reside? The administrative contact. So these are just some examples, and I think we should really spend some more time probably on a separate topic to clarify what it means to be residing in some territory or subject to some jurisdiction. And I still think that it's probably about time to make a decision how we will structure this report, because it appears that we will have many segments that will look exactly the same in different parts of the report, for the delegation, for the revocation, whatever. And we don't want those texts to have any difference just because they are interpretation. So we must have the same interpretation of the same term, and we need to find some solution to that. And I see this is becoming more and more of a problem as the text grows.
Noted. Thank you. Martin, then Eberhard. Martin.
Thanks, Chair. I've got quite a number of points. Firstly, about the administrative contact, I have got a very vague recollection of an earlier document that we worked our way through, which was full of definitions, where we struggled with the roles of admin and technical contact, and I can't remember what we did with it. I had it vaguely in my mind that we crossed, put a line through them and said these weren't actually particularly relevant. And certainly when I look at, is it 3.1 of RFC 1591, it is... Well, it's the only reference I can easily find by flicking through to an administrative contact, and it just says there must be an administrative contact, giving no clues as to the role, and then, as we've indicated here, that they must reside in country. Can I pick up a couple of points that have been made about specific examples? Fear that we might end up actually just getting bogged down in specific examples without any good outcome. Somebody mentioned AFNIC and the French territories. Well, actually, France, being the nature of country that it is, these are territories, overseas territories, overseas departments. They are run from Paris. They're under French law. The European Union,
the delegation is to the European Commission, which is based in Brussels. Therefore, it's under any contracts that it issues for its manager are under Brussels law, and that is very clearly indicated in the reference. And the reason I come up with these examples is that we risk getting bogged down in a detail that we shouldn't be getting bogged down in. And so I then picked up the GAC principles and guidelines for the delegation and administration of country code top-level domains. And I will quote clause 1.2, which a far-seeing GAC very neatly put a square box around so that you can find it nice and easily, even though it is only the second paragraph in the document. And that says, most of the CCT policy issues are local in nature and should therefore be addressed by the local internet community according to national law. And I think my interpretation there is back again to that understanding that there has to be a link into the local jurisdiction because, and I think this issue is going to come up when we start talking about significantly interested parties again and the GAC advice as to properly understanding the framework in which we work. In other words, that I am firmly of the view that we do need to cover it here because the jurisdictional issue is actually going to be very, very important for any action that you are taking. Sorry to be a bit long. But
certainly, that's a view. Eberhard, and then Becky. Eberhard.
I was also going to say something about jurisdiction. Why do we need this? We need to be able, the local government need to be able to access the local, the manager of the CCTLD associated with that country territory. If you do it for Antarctica, I think it's perfectly acceptable that one of the treaty states does that. If you're in the European Union, it's perfectly acceptable that the manager is in. It actually must be in one of the European states, not necessarily Brussels, because under European law, you cannot have it in one state. If, for example, somebody bids in Germany and gets it, then it would have to move, but it wouldn't mean anything jurisdictionally as far as the European Community. It doesn't matter. We don't have to go there. Yeah, we should basically make sure that there is an administrative contact, that it can be reached, and that is subject to the jurisdiction of the CCTLD with which he is associated, or his country is territory or organization is associated.
Okay, I have Becky, then Daniel. Daniel.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick remark to what just Eberhard said. It makes sense, but we need to find out how to match it with the language in the document. Because the document says, what we are interpreting says that the administrative contact must be resident in the country. Just one more thing. And since you raised the European Union, it has a strange feature that every citizen from a country that is member of the European Union is supposed to be able to move freely in the European Union. So they may choose to reside or work or whatever anywhere. And this is their, right. So this makes things quite complicated if we are to interpret things in the very narrow way of they must reside in the country, because they have the legal option not to reside there.
Okay. I think I've got Eberhard, then Bill, then Bernie. But before we...
Just one second. Let the record show that I pointed my finger at Bernie.
Okay. I think what we need is a clear precedent here, so I think we should ask Nominate to move to Scotland and see what happens as a result. Sorry, I did have a speaking order of Bill, then Bernie.
Hi, it's Bill. Just as an aside, before I make my point, there is a top-level domain for France's external territories, which has never been delegated, .fx, which would take care of all of these territories. I don't know why it's never been delegated, although I could guess.
I think,
but that's just an aside.
Yeah.
On the matter of the paragraphs before us, I had thought that 523342 addresses these confusing issues about where the administrative contact must live or not, and I'm perfectly happy with this language.
Okay.
In the document that Bernie has put forward.
Maybe they need to be brought together in the single paragraph may add to it. Bernie, did you?
Well, I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think there's been great input. This is the kind of stuff that, for me, provides a lot of feedback. And at this point, I mean, we can carry on if people have more opinions, but I think I've got enough to come up with some new text, which we can then beat the hell out of at our next meeting.
Okay. Well, is that a reasonable way forward? Does anyone have anything additional that we haven't? We are starting to go a little circular. Martin does. So.
Yes, thanks. It's just an immediate response to Bill that I actually would have a problem just sticking with the two paragraphs that are there at the moment, because I do think this jurisdiction issue does need to be nailed. So sorry about that. I'm just going to have to be awkward about it, I guess.
Well, my proposal then for a way forward might be that Martin and Bernie work together I think the two of you would have a fairly good feel for the discussion so far. Sorry, Stephen, you did have your hand raised. Was it a new point or is it a little bit?
No, I just wanted to say that echo Bill's sentiments, that I'm, for the record, happy with what I'm looking at here in these two paragraphs.
Okay. Patricia?
Yeah, I'm a bit uneasy with the introduction of the jurisdiction word, since it's not present in the RFC. And if we were to introduce jurisdiction, I would rather think of it applying to the manager rather than to one employee of the manager.
Good point. Okay. Martin and Bernie, do you feel you have sufficient input that you may be able to synthesize this into something useful? Martin?
I'm not sure necessarily that we have, because it came out to me that there is a distinct rift in views, in that I think that if it means anything, having a person based in jurisdiction actually is because, well, in a territory, actually does mean that, why do you want the person there? You want them there because there is a jurisdictional issue, and I think that needs to be brought into play. But we've heard three voices around the table of people indicating that they don't mind about jurisdictional issue. Now, the other point I have, and I actually made specific principles, but of course all the text that we're working on here is about RFC 1591. I'm quite happy to sort of cobble together something that puts an input from the GAC principles, but my question would be whether we're going to try and embody some of the ideas from the GAC principles in later in the document, or whether in fact it is actually appropriate to put it in here. I happen to think it is appropriate to put it in here, but I might look towards our colleague from the GAC to say where he thinks he might prefer to see it.
Okay, Bicky.
Can I make a suggestion? This is a really an important issue, and it has huge implications for sort of where IANA sits and what IANA is expected to do. And it seems to me we might want to just take this off the table, gather some facts, put some alternative positions on the table, and think through it very carefully. I understand Patricio's concern about the word jurisdiction. I totally understand everything that everybody's saying here. It sort of makes me hyperventilate from the, if we don't get it right, we'll be in trouble.
I would love to work with Becky on that.
Yeah, I think, yes, let's move on, please. I think points taken, points noted, and we'll come back in due course and revisit. And noting that we're a long way from any form of resolution on this.
It's a clarifying question. So are Bernie and Martin going to work on this offline, or is
I think
going to be a group?
The chair, vice chair are going to have a discussion afterwards and see what our plan should be, and we'll come back to the group when we've got a way forward. So it will be the topic of a call or two yet. So we'll take it on board to find an action plan. Okay, moving along, I'd like to just spend 10 more minutes on this document if we can, and then move off the topic of revocation altogether. Bernie, do you want to progress us through any more?
Yes, sir. I believe there's yet more text to be looked at. Defining substantial misbehavior 524.
Sorry, yes, Martin.
There's a comment against 52335. Are we considering that to be part of the text that is going to be subject to chair, vice chair? Looking for compromise and way forward. 52335, your comment said his section should be marked for review in Prague. I think it was supposed to be this section.
Yes.
Should be marked. But we're in Prague.
Yeah, this was quite a healthy debate, and I don't think if we're trying to limit it to 10 minutes, we're actually going to get to this one. So that's why I actually didn't take this one on right now.
Okay. Fine, so long as we don't just forget it.
That's why it's noted. Okay. Moving on. Defining substantial misbehavior 524. Substantial misbehavior, significant incompetence or unwillingness by the incumbent manager to correct important issues with respect to the requirements of RFC 1591 for managers of CCTLDs. This is the result of our general agreement on what it was trying to say from our last meeting, and now you get a chance to read it as words and see if it still works. But basically, at our last meeting, this is where the notes told us we came out.
So, any questions or comments? Stephen?
This works for me.
Any dissent? I think we have consensus. So please continue.
Okay, 5242 did not change. And I don't think there are any new comments on that. Then we move on to process for revocation 525. I will pull up the notes if you'll give me a second. No notes. There have been a few minor edits, I believe. So we'll go through the text. Come on. 52-51 under process for revocation. Yes, sir.
Can we make the documents callable again?
No, because there are participants in the room who don't have computers, I want the whiteboard to continue scrolling, and the only way that can be done is by locking the scrolling. So sorry, you'll have to.
I can't really work like that. I need to read it on my screen. Going back, that's not really helpful for the process.
I guess the priority for this group is that the working group members are satisfied, so can we allow everyone to scroll?
All right, so what we've done in 5251 is import the changes from the previous section that defined substantial misbehavior so that the language syncs up and the terms are the same. So it now reads, the FOI working group also believes it is consistent with the intent of RFC 1591 to state that revocation should be a last resort option for the IANA contractor. Full stop. The IANA contractor should use all means at its disposal to assist the manager to resolve any now important versus substantial issues with the requirements of RFC 1591 that are applicable to managers, period. Revocation should only be considered if the IANA contractor can reasonably demonstrate that the manager is significantly unwilling to resolve the clearly identified and documented issues in an appropriate time frame. If the delegation is revoked, the IANA contractor should use all means at its disposal to ensure the CCTLD will continue to resolve names and that the published process to identify a suitable replacement is undertaken and expedited.
Okay, comments, questions, feelings? Stephen's got a thumb up. Bill has a thumb up. Daniel wants to make a point. And Cheryl had a thumb up.
I will be very short, and it's a little bit off topic. I mean, we continue to use the IANA contractor term, and by reading the text, this is very distracting. Why should not we use IANA only?
I think
it's apparent that somebody is performing that task. I know that we have gone through this again and again. But if you have not been in that discussions, reading this text makes it very heavy.
I appreciate that, but I think we've been through this iteration a number of times, and it's the confusion of the IANA database, the IANA function, the IANA contractor. So this is for the purpose of total clarity and for the purpose of consistency. We've got to keep repeating it. So sorry, but I think we've visited that on a number of occasions. Okay, I detected a number of thumbs up all the way through there, so I think we can accept. Martin. Just in time.
I just wondered whether somebody could remind me how we got to committing the IANA contractor to use all the means at their disposal to assist the manager to resolve any important issues. It's not an unreasonable expectation that the IANA contract manager, the IANA the IANA shouldn't actually be there to act as helper and mentor,
But I guess this is really a question for Kim as to whether the statement of work that will then lead to the basis of the future contract would really allow IANA to be devoting a lot of work onto doing it. And then my other question would be, and would this actually cover all the areas, because it actually might drag the IANA contractor into doing a lot of work that was not necessarily in the contractor's skill set. So perhaps a question for Kim to tell me he can't answer because of the current situation.
Okay, thanks, Matt. And I think the issue arose because there was this desire to from the working group that their interpretation be that the revocation be the point of last resort. So there's an exhaustive process of seeking to remedy and so on. So, but Kim, do you have a response?
Sure. So I was trying to quickly scramble and get the RFP text in front of me, but I haven't been fast enough. Well, I mean, to my recollection, there's nothing explicit about this in the contract other than where to implement consensus policies that come out of community. So if you come up with this, I don't know if that meets the test or not. That's about all I really can say.
This is not a creation of policy, it's an interpretation of existing policy.
I'll let brighter minds than me argue the distinction on that.
Was that an answer to your question? No.
others might judge differently, but I guess my feeling is no, because there is this issue as to how far IANA might be being considered to be sticking its nose into other people's business. I think for me the fundamental statement is that it's the last resort option. You know, this is the nuclear option. And normally if there's a last resort, there should be at least some effort to resolve it. It was just this sudden extension, and I probably wasn't paying attention at the time, or perhaps didn't attend that call, as to why the IANA contractor is suddenly being committed to putting in what might be a massive amount of work. And so that was really what tempted me to ask the question.
Kim?
I agree. The wording is potentially vague enough that it could imply that, although, you know, maybe it's an overly technical reading, but, I take that at face value to read that if at all possible, if the zone file can continue to function so that names continue to resolve, it doesn't mean taking over registry functions or such, but just keeping the names resolving as a status quo. That's kind of how I read it, but, you know, it's subject to interpretation for sure.
Okay. Thanks, Kim. We're happy then. Martin, are you now moderately happy with the text or happy with the text?
I must admit, the words that Kim just used were essentially the words I was looking for. And so I feel much happier with that, whether we can actually embody that so it's clearer in the text to people with such shallow brains as mine, might just be considered, but I leave it up to you.
Excellent, thank you. Bernie?
And I have to say I'm very comfortable with what Kim said, and that was definitely where we were headed, so maybe I can work with him over the coming weeks and we can tease out some clarifications just to make sure there's less issues with the possible interpretation.
Okay. Can we then rule a line under 5.2.5.1 and say that's how far through the document we've got, and now leave the topic of revocation? Is everyone happy to do that? I don't think we can get completely through the document in the time anyway. So perhaps now we could go to the GAC SIP comments. And Frank, thank you for cajoling the GAC into responding. And we realise the GAC are busy and industrious and have a lot on their plate. So thank you for ensuring that they haven't forgotten about FOI Working Group. And I wonder if we could put the letter on screen. And Frank, would you like to... do you have it in front of you? Do you want to talk to it?
I cannot hear you.
Yeah, sorry, I've been neglected for my duties. I do not have it right in front of me at the moment. If you can get it up on the screen, that would be great.
It's coming. So,
having said that, I actually now have them here.
Oh, good. Well, if you'd like to start talking us through the document, Frank, and we'll get it up on screen as quickly as we can. Thank you, Christina. So, Frank.
Yep. The main issue is that the GAC position is that the SIP document doesn't take Section 4.1 of the GAC principles adequately into account, and the particular phrase is ultimate public policy authority for the relevant CCTLD rests with the relevant government or public authority. And then the other issue was section 7.1 of the GAC document stating that delegation and redelegation is a national issue and should be resolved nationally. And that of course is somewhat contentious for some members of the CCNSO, I realise, but the GAC is pretty firm on the view that in terms of a national debate or consultation on the CCTLD, the government is first among equals, if you will, at least. And that's pretty much an established GAC position, which is really not going to change. So that's really the basis of the comment. There's an issue of process in that it's noted in here that we're concerned that the interim report seems to suggest that IANA would somehow duplicate the national process. That is, the request that IANA would make some sort of adjudication as to who to be heard from a national process seems to impose a pressure on IANA, which this whole thing is trying to move away from, so that they've got a set of clear principles to work to, and that they're not put into a position of making judgment calls. So there's a problem there. So I guess that's really the issue, is the role of governments. GAC sees governments as being first among equals when it comes to making decisions of the sort or consultations of the sort. And I'm afraid that the GAC, you know, from the point of view of the CCNSO and this working group, the GAC is unlikely to move away from that position. I think that's all I need to say at the moment, Keith.
Thank you, Frank. Do we have any comments or Any reaction from our group? Vicky?
I think what I want to explore is whether we can focus on that sort of process piece here and satisfy the gap, because I do understand the concern that a government as a significantly interested party may in one way or another go through a whole process. So, for example, I'll take the process where .ca was delegated, where there was this whole big process, and I guess it wasn't delegated, but it was and then the question is, would IANA come in and then repeat that process? And that would clearly be seems to me to be a source of problematic. The other part of this is that I don't see how we can get on the grounds of on the 1591 alone, a sort of, the government just says, here's the delegation, and there's a, you know, 1591 doesn't, it says governments are important. It doesn't say if the government decides it's the only significantly interested party, it's the only significantly interested party. So the question I have is, if there is some way of focusing on, you know, a sort of not overturning a process undertaken within a local within a CC community, country or jurisdiction. Or do you think we have to go farther?
Patricia, just to be precise.
Just before, can we let Frank respond, and I'll then come to you. Thank you.
My feeling is, and I really wish that Suzanne was here, she has spent a lot more time thinking about this than I have, as we said, first of all, the idea that IANA should pick and choose as to which advice it's going to take is an anathema. I mean, let's be quite clear about that. And I think there's got to be a shared territory between the CCNSO and the GAC, that we don't want IANA making decisions in a messy way. I mean, it's the whole reason for setting up this working group. So that's point one. And point two is that there should be no question in the mind of anyone that the GAC is clearly of the opinion that its principles for delegation and redelegation stand equal to RFC 1591 in terms of the principles on which these texts have to be sorted. If there is any doubt that that is GAC advice to the board, the GAC is remedying that now to remove any shadow of doubt, in fact, that clearly is advice to the board, and in fact advice that's been accepted by the board for a long time. So that's sort of the two stakes in the ground, any area of compromise, I think, has to recognise those two points.
Okay. I guess the question for us is how we can accommodate some slightly divergent views. Patricio had his hand up first, then Daniel. Patricio.
Yeah, just one small point about what something Becky said, that their RFC 1591 says that governments are important. I believe that phrase is not in the RFC, but rather in CCTLD news memo number one or two.
Memo one.
Yep. I think, Frank, the issue here for the CCTLD community is that if we don't have a firm attachment to our policy principles, historic policy principles, then we are not empowered as a group to make policy. So if this becomes a major issue, it may need to go to a separate PDP. So my preference is that we work really hard to find a compromise that we can all live with, rather than having to go back to the CCNSO and say, we can't, and you going back to the GAC saying we can't resolve this, the only way forward is a PDP, and perhaps nobody would like the outcome of that. So perhaps we should take this back, wait for Suzanne and perhaps any of your other GAC colleagues who feel strongly about this, and take it on to a call and see if we can find a way forward. But I've got Martin, then Daniel. Daniel, then Martin. We'll do it alphabetically.
Thank you. Okay, I see the problem here in that we try to use the SIP context in the same way for new delegation and for redelegation. And I will try to extend this a bit. The issue is that nothing in internet is local. I mean, even if it is CCTLD or even if it is an IDN CCTLD for very specific script and anything, it is used not only by people in that country and especially under that jurisdiction. And by definition, governments don't have any jurisdiction outside their territory. Okay, that's in principle, not always. So what I see as an issue is that when we talk about new delegations, it is perfectly okay for the government to have a say, because now we are much after the time when this RFC was designed, and more or less governments have some idea of what the internet is, better idea. And so in this case, I think the GAC principles are perfectly in line, and they're designed the government to have more significant say is probably okay. I think we have to discuss that, but for me it's okay. But the other case, when you have some existing CCTLD, and the government insists to be the party to say what happens with that CCTLD, is a problem, because this existing CCTLD is actually serving the whole internet already. It is serving parties that belong to other jurisdictions also, in many cases. So it is not easy to say that this government has the ultimate say. It makes the CCTLD property of that country or government. And another more point here is that I will give the example of BG. We have the same registry operating the CCTLD, the manager, for already 21 years. We have seen a dozen of different governments come and go, and all of those governments, all of them, had completely different ideas how to handle the CCTLD and the internet in the country in more global context. So if we say that the government is the ultimate party that has to have the final saying, in a way, we may create a lot of problems. And by saying all this, I still think that it's important that we somehow keep the process of deciding those things within the country. But the determination whether the CCTLD manager is misbehaving or is doing something improper in one way or another is probably better left to IANA.
Yes, I think you're touching on a very, very important point here, and that is that, and I think RSC 1591 describes this quite well, and I don't have 1591 in front of me, but it describes how the CCTLD shall act in the best interests of the country and the global internet itself. And there's almost an inherent requirement for what we come up with to not be an inward focused, the government makes the decision for the CCTLD and that is the end of the matter, and that the government isn't subject to the obligations of the global internet. But I do have a speaking order, so I'm just throwing that out as a provocative statement. I've got Martin, then Becky, then Frank.
Thanks, Keith. I'm running into a little bit of dilemma on this. I actually don't have a problem at all with the concept that Frank raised, that there is a certain first among equals element, and we did actually have a discussion on this when we talked about this section. It's got a first among equals role in the country, territory, or whatever it is, because of its role as the government. And under international law, under local law, it represents the interested parties in that country or territory. And that, I think, comes in quite clearly in the preamble section of the GAC principles, which also quotes, I was about to say ad nauseum, but that's not quite the word I meant, in great detail, at great length, from certain sections of the WSIS. At that stage, it was the Geneva phase of WSIS. No doubt one could also grovel all over the Tunis agenda text and find even more bits to put in, that there is this policy authority as being their sovereign rights. So I think this is actually very dangerous ground for us to sort of stroll over to try and rewrite international laws. I recognise, and so did the GAC principles, the global role of a CCTLD, and the GAC principles, and go back to paragraph 1.2 of the GAC principles, which was quite clear about, yes, there might well be certain things that have to be resolved in international framework, but it puts it back into being the local responsibility. So again, you know, I think that we need to go back to the GAC principles, and that actually gets me to my main point and your comment, Keith, that if we start going down looking at the GAC comments, do we go into inventing policy and thereby having to go into a PDP? And I'd say, personally, I don't think so, because the GAC have actually put this document down. We heard very clearly from them earlier this week that they consider it to be an advice to the board and therefore really equivalent to policy. And certainly in the early days when we were looking at the documents which we should be referring to and drawing our interpretation from, the GAC principles were one of those, actually only two documents, the GAC principles and RFC 1591. And somehow or other we seem to have managed to forget entirely about the GAC principles. I think the GAC have quite rightly wrapped our knuckles and told us we need to go back and see what the implications of the GAC principles actually are for us. So I really don't see that the logical conclusion of what Frank said, Frank and the GAC said, would be to push us towards a PDP. Thanks.
Okay. Look, I don't think we're going to resolve anything here today, but I have Becky and Bill. I was originally Becky and Frank, but I'll go Becky, Bill, and then give Frank a final sum up. And I don't think we're going to conclude this today, so it's still a work in progress. So if you were hoping to speak to it, save yourself and we'll come back to it. So, sorry, Becky, you first.
I hear both of you, but I do feel we have a sort of quandary that we're going to have to think really hard about, because if the view of the government is always determinative, then what do we do with a situation where there's a CCTLD that is, you know, breaking the stability and security? I'm pretty sure the GAC, well, I don't know. I mean, would the position of the GAC be if the government says you leave them in the route and they're the operator, or there's a delegation request that comes from a government and, you know, not using much imagination, the contractor says this actor has engaged in malicious destabilizing activity in the past. Would the GAC say the contractor must put them in the route as the designated manager? So I think it's those. We can't get to a place where the answer is simply, you know, without consequence to the global internet, whatever the government says goes. And so what I'm worried about is, I mean, I hear you, but we should try to figure out a way through this, and maybe we can have some imaginative, creative thinking about this problem in particular with the GAC.
Okay. I think we'll come to Frank. But I think, yes, yeah. And I think going back to Martin's comments too, there is some agreed text specifically in the WSIS document, which, you know, again, we might evaluate that as perhaps being a policy statement that has been agreed by member states that might be useful to guide us in this regard too, because I recall some of that text as being moderately useful in this regard. So let's see what we can synthesise, but Bill, then Frank with the final word.
I agree with what you've said, Becky, but I have a few related comments. You know, a government would be running a CCTLD, and what happens if the government is doing it badly itself? Who do we listen to? The internet community will be complaining to IANA. IANA isn't so much a regulatory body as a standards monitoring or standards operational body, in my opinion. And so, you know, to say that the government, any government, is the first among equals, say, to the ISO, or any other standards body that tries to implement a set of standards for certain technical operations, is overreaching, I think. The issue for me is that, yes, certainly governments are significantly interested parties. Certainly governments have the rule of law in any local activity within their jurisdiction. But I think the point of ICON and IANA is to set an interoperability standard among a private network of private networks, not among government divisions, departments, or networks. And that's what we're here and have been here for 15 years now, working to make happen.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I'm not. Daniel, I said Frank would be the last speaker, and this is a continuing discussion for later. So thank you, Bill. And Frank, last point to you.
Yeah, thanks, Keith, and thanks for the opportunity. I mean, obviously, I completely agree with the point that Becky is making, and that others have touched on, that if you have a rogue government which is endangering the internet structure, then clearly something has to be done about it. I think it's very unwise that it be left to IANA to do something about it, though. I don't think that's appropriate. So that's an issue, I think, that needs to lie on the table. And the GAC has undertaken that when this document is completed, that we'll go back and re-examine the GAC principles to see if there is a modification that's required in order to accommodate what comes out of this. So this is a process that, you know, it's got quite a long way to go from that point of view. And what the answer to that issue of a rogue government is, I don't know. There is, of course, also the other point that's been made about the fact that in some cases, and in fact New Zealand is one, .nz is one, where there's a global community of interest. It's not just the citizens of one particular territory or country. And there are many CCTLDs that are like that. So there are issues of that sort which clearly need to be thought about. But in terms, Keith, of new policy issues, I'd remind people that there is, in fact, a policy development process going on now called the revision of the ITRs, culminating in a treaty negotiation in December this year. And we're all endangered by that. And we need to make sure that whatever ICANN is doing in terms of the role of governments is something which stands up in a global context. And I think that the GAC will do its bit, I'm speculating here, by recognising that governments have a responsibility to the global internet very clearly, and if that doesn't come through adequately in the GAC principles as they currently stand, no doubt the revision of the GAC principles can tackle that issue. But that's probably all I can say about it at the moment.
Okay. I'm sorry, Daniel, unless it's something really critical and really brief. Okay, 30 seconds.
Okay, by listening to some of the recent talks, I came to this vision that we all know that CCTLD should be under the local jurisdiction. And the idea is that the government can apply local laws and things like that. I mean, to the CCTLD manager and create the frameworks and so on. So this is the ultimate tool that the local government has to have their wishes actually implemented. And it just occurred to me that the desire of many governments to have direct say to what IANA will do is in a way a shortcut to skip this creation of local laws that will impact the CCTLD and request something from IANA which is not in the local law.
Okay.
Which is some very interesting development, in a way, and not lawful.
Okay, noted. Thank you. I think we need to draw a line under the GAC SIP comments, and I think let's see if we can ensure very early on in our call schedule going forwards that we have this, that we have our GAC colleagues on the call and go into further debate. I'm not sure that we'll get an end resolution by the extant working group, so I'm working with a view in mind to, after having a fuller discussion, that perhaps we might form a smaller group to see if they can plot a path that will be satisfactory to us all. So I'm forewarning of that. We have a schedule of meetings going forwards towards ICANN Toronto. I've got 2, 4, 6, 7 seven noted teleconferences starting on the 12th of July at 0500 UTC, and working its way through fortnightly, or every 2 weeks for people who don't understand the term fortnightly, culminating on 18th of October in Toronto. Can we have 1 minute about, if can I just have a show of hands, if ICANN continues in its current form of everything finishing on Thursday. Do you still want to have this meeting on the Thursday, or do you want to have it on the Sunday?
Wednesday.
I find that would be almost impossible with CCNSO members meeting and council meeting. It is possible. No, well, why would people...
We can have telephone conferences on Friday morning.
Okay, so no clear opinion. So maybe we do I'll take it up with the secretariat, and maybe we do a doodle poll to re-examine what suits the members best, and we'll apply some weighting on the basis of the number of calls you've participated on so far as being an important factor, so that people who have participated most have the most say. Okay, Frank...
Sorry, Kelly, I don't know if I'll take up a lot of time, but I just noticed you left out Monday completely. Is Monday a day which is impossible for anybody to have a meeting on?
Monday is extremely difficult to a number of people on the working group because of Tech Day. So, you know, I think what we're seeing is ICANN is moving backwards. I see the GAC moving backwards into earlier and earlier start times. So, in fact... finishing on Thursday is the final consequence of everyone starting earlier in the week. But we haven't started earlier in the week, so perhaps we need to consider
the GAC is also moving forward. We started Saturday afternoon. We worked Sunday. We took Monday off because it is a cost constituency day. We worked Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday until 2 o'clock.
Well, anyway, I think I'm not happy that we continue to continue and will go head to head with public forum. So, let's see what ICANN says after this meeting about its ongoing commitment, and then let's look at a doodle poll and so on. Martin,
If I can just sort of have a 2 cents worth here. What is concerning me is that if we start squeezing this in earlier in the week, we're going to miss the input. And one of the advantages that we have of doing this working group face-to-face in situ is that, you know, here we have a GAC colleague with us, we have a good turnout. And so long as we all know well in advance... then we just adjust our travel schedule. So, in fact, I do wonder whether it's a bit unfortunate for the public forum, or alternatively, we look in the morning, we try and find some way of getting it in, because, with the notable exception of Nigel, we're all here. Mm. And it would seem to me that, you know, here is a real opportunity... Whereas if you move it forward, squeeze it in, I would actually be very reluctant to see that we're not getting GAC attendance at that working group.
Sure, but as we have more events coming together, as we have with ISOC Advisory Council tomorrow morning, that would spoil it for you and I. We have to choose which one. After Toronto, there's the ISOC board meeting for 2 days and so on and so on. So I think it is getting complicated, and we're not going to resolve it by going around in circles here. So I think let's see what happens with ICANN after here and whether they make changes. And let's just note that we probably do have to make some change somewhere. Okay, I think with that, we're a little bit after our closing time. So thank you all for your participation today. I thought it was really excellent. I enjoy the face-to-face aspects because it allows us to get very granular and concentrate rigorously on the topics in front of us. So I think we made very good progress today, and we'll meet again on the 12th of July. So thank you, and with that, I'll close the meeting. Cheers.